Welcome to English for International Students, Episode 5. As always, we are so glad to have you guys with us. This week, I will be interviewing a special guest, and he will be discussing what it's like to be a small business owner and some of the challenges that he faces and some of the things that influence his mindset as a manager and owner of a business. We hope you guys enjoy it very much. It will actually be a two-part interview, so you guys will hear the first half of the interview in today's episode. Next week, we'll have our language-focused episode, and then the following week, for episode 6, you will get to hear the second half of the interview. Remember that you can find additional resources on our blog, englishpodcastblog.wordpress.com. You can leave us comments there. We are always eager to hear from you. You can also email us at English.podcast.ttu@gmail.com. Without further ado, our interview. Okay, so this is Lindley, and we have the unique pleasure of sitting down with a very special guest. This week on the podcast is my father, Jeff Jones. Dad, thanks so much for agreeing to be on the podcast.
It's my pleasure.
So today we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the small business in the United States, which I think is kind of a pillar of the culture. And I think that people see the entrepreneurial spirit as a big part of American culture. And we also want to talk just a little bit about work culture in the U.S. So will you just start off by explaining a little bit about what you do and how long you've been in the business that you're in and just kind of a brief introduction?
Okay, I've been in the home improvement industry for about almost 35 years. The first 5 years of that, I spent working for a contractor in sales. And a little over 29 years ago, my wife and I opened up a new company that's called Jones & Associates. It's a regional business that offers siding, replacement windows, and metal roofing for residential use. And so we both sell and install those products.
Okay, great. Thank you. So when you were first starting out in that business, what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is anytime you're starting out, you've usually got some established competition. So being a newcomer into the business, it's kind of a challenge for people to be able to place their faith in an unproven company. Mm-hmm. Number one, you have no track record that can be verified as far as your honesty, your integrity, your ability to turn out the type of work that you're saying that you can. Mm-hmm. Plus, everybody understands that most new businesses have a small likelihood of surviving more than 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if you've been in business for 6 months and you go out and you're pursuing construction work, and you're going to tell a prospective customer that you're going to put a 10-year warranty on your labor, that's almost meaningless, because mm-hmm. most companies that are 6 months old will not survive 10 years.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so, you know, you're in essence looking for pioneers as customers.
And so, by pioneers, you mean?
Somebody that's forging new ground.
Okay.
That they're willing to roll the dice, take a chance.
They almost like the idea that you're a new company.
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So I have a few follow-up questions. First of all, you mentioned that in your business and in your industry and a lot of businesses might provide a warranty for the work that you do. What do you mean by warranty?
Well, a warranty is a contractual agreement. Although there can be just verbal warranties that are given, but still, there's a contractual implication there that, for example, on a labor warranty, what you're telling the customer is that you're going to ensure that the products were installed in a workmanlike manner as per prescribed by industry specifications, and that they could expect a certain standard of performance for them over a set specific period of time. And so, for example, if you warrant a window to be free from defect and its installation to provide for limited infiltration of dirt for a 10-year period, if there was an inordinate accumulation of dirt during that 10-year period, that would fall under the labor warranty. So, in essence, you're saying you call me anytime during the next 10 years that you have a problem. And if it's connected to the way the windows were installed, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to fix it.
Okay, interesting. So there could be a labor warranty and a material warranty.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Okay, so you kind of mentioned some challenges to overcome. And to me, that kind of brings up two follow-up questions. One is, so you mentioned that customers have this sense that a lot of times new businesses don't really last, and that you have not necessarily proven your track record. Mm-hmm. So how did you and your own business overcome that in the minds of customers?
Well, there's a number of ways to do that. Number one, how convincing can you be in a presentation mm-hmm. that you're going to be the exception to the rule?
Okay.
And that just goes back to salesmanship and your ability to persuade people to follow your line of reasoning. That's one thing. And then it's also common for there to be additional inducements given when somebody's just entering into a marketplace. In other words, let's say the common price for a standard sized window from an established company might be $750. Mm-hmm. But because you're a newcomer into the marketplace as a vendor, and you don't have that established track record, you give a $75 per window inducement and say, I'll put in the same window for you for less money.
Okay.
And that's your ticket in, you know. And then you build upon that. And the more customers that you can establish, regardless of the price that you sold them at, is what establishes your track record.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. So not only do your customers likely know that businesses only last a few years or maybe even just a few months, but you yourself knew that most businesses that start out do not make it past a certain point. So knowing that, what made you decide to do it anyway? And how do you think you remain successful?
Well, I felt like we had a good shot at doing business because at making the business successful, because I had been on the sales and marketing side of a very similar business to what mm-hmm. we created. I felt like I could be successful in the sales process because I was already successful. Mm-hmm. I was just going to hang my hat in a different office, so to speak. But we made a commitment that we were going to make it work. You know, there's no saying, you know, you throw your hat over the fence, mm-hmm. which in essence, if you're going to get over a fence and you're going to go ahead and make an investment by throwing your hat over it. So if you don't make it over the fence, you're going to lose your hat, you know. So we threw our hat over the fence and made a full commitment that the business was going to work, come love nor money. So
yeah.
We made it happen.
Kind of like the burning your boat behind you. Exactly. Isn't there a saying like that?
Same thing.
Yeah. So same you were in deep enough that you had no choice but to make it work.
Well, I had a wife and several children, yeah. you know, and there's something about kids. They like to eat every day. And
yeah.
and so, yeah, we just had to make it work. So we had a lot of motivation.
Yeah. Well, speaking as one of those children, I'm really glad it worked out.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So what you're kind of describing seems core to the entrepreneurial spirit. And we kind of mentioned at the beginning that that is a big part of American culture. Do you have anything that you could say to expound on that? How would you define what it means to be an entrepreneur? What does it mean to be a business starter, and what do you think it takes in general to make that work?
That's a very good question. An entrepreneur, from the way I would define it, as far as a business enterprise, is just something that creates something out of nothing.
Okay.
That you have an idea, a skill, something that allows you to take that ideal and turn it into a commercial enterprise, you know, but where it's the interesting part of your question is the fact that there are many people that consider themselves entrepreneurs that really aren't entrepreneurs.
And that they're not successful?
And they're many times not successful. And so business startups are normally populated by three different groups. You have true entrepreneurs, you have managers, and you have technicians.
Okay.
And so let me give you a for example. Let's say that there's a guy that knows everything about air conditioners.
Okay.
He can install them, he can repair them, he can take them apart and put them back together, all those things. And let's say he's got a lot of experience. And so he has worked for a number of different businesses that dealt in air conditioning equipment over the years, and he's decided, hey, I know everything there is to know about air conditioners. I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next week, he decides he's going to hang out his shingle and become the new air conditioning business in town. Well, that would be a technician in pursuit of a business enterprise. However, that technician may have zero skills in management. He may have zero skills in the critical aspects of marketing and finance, but he's a good technician. But unless he can either quickly gain those skills or surround himself by people that have them working on his behalf, he's destined for failure.
Okay.
By the same token, sometimes there are managers that they are accustomed to organization, they understand finance, they understand spreadsheets, but they know absolutely nothing about the technical side of an enterprise.
Yeah.
If they don't get schooled very quickly on that or surround themselves by people that are, they too are destined for failure. So it's the entrepreneur who normally has enough well-rounded knowledge in the managerial aspect and the technical aspects of a business that he can coordinate those things if it's outside of his specific knowledge, and make an enterprise that's effective. So,
okay,
good question.
Interesting. So you feel like it's kind of the person who can bring all of those things together.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you have to wear a lot of hats.
Well, it's kind of like an architect.
Uh-huh.
It's just somebody that starts, or an artist that starts with a blank canvas and knows how to draw the lines in for something that has beauty and purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good description. I think I've always appreciated that about you and knowing what I know about your business, and having worked in, you know, in my past work experience, usually some larger organizations where I see a lot of people that have more specialized positions, which is something that you can just afford in a larger organization. But I feel like in a smaller business, and especially in a startup business, there is a time, usually, especially in the inception of that business, when you have to be able to do almost everything.
You wear a lot of hats.
Yeah. You have to know a little bit about all of it and be able to do all of it until you can kind of hand those things off. It's very interesting. So you kind of mentioned the manager aspect of business. So as your business continued to grow and you ended up employing more people, I'm a little bit interested to know about that side of things and about what you look for in an employee. So when you sit down in a job interview, what are some of the things that you tend to ask, and why do you ask those things? What are you looking for?
Well, personally, for me, you know, we hire for a number of different positions. You know, some of them are trade or technical oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Some are sales positions. Some are clerical, you know, such as that. So There's certainly different questions that you would pose for different type positions, but in the general, I will say this, that unless you're talking about a highly technical position that would require specialized knowledge or specialized training, that most employers are looking first for the character issues.
Okay.
There was an interesting book that was written called Good to Great, and in there it talks about the way that people have staffed different companies.
Uh-huh.
And they gave this illustration that the important decisions to make are who are the people that you're going to put on your bus for the journey of a startup to a mature business. The particular seats that they sit in on that bus are less important than who's on the bus.
Okay.
And so, you know, you want to surround yourself by people that have integrity, have good judgment, mm-hmm. have a strong work ethic. And as far as interviewing people, those are some of the questions that you ask. And the past many times can be a strong indicator of the future. And so okay. you want to look at what people's work experience has been, not only from the experience that they've garnered there, but what were their attitudes towards these different companies and these different experiences that they've had? Are these people primarily positive? Are they negative? Are they self-driven, you know,
mm-hmm.
or the opposite, you know? And so for me, I like to hire attitude.
Okay.
And sometimes that's more important than aptitude, you know, because yeah. there's so many things that can be taught to someone relatively quickly
mm-hmm.
if they've got a desire to learn and a desire to succeed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think you're right. I think that's true of a lot of American employers. So obviously in the job interview scenario, people are trying to paint themselves in the best possible light. And a lot of people try to guess at what you're looking for, but sometimes they're not so successful at that. So what are some major red flags to you or big turnoffs that if you see a hint of something or you hear someone say something in particular, you say, okay, this is not a good fit?
Well, probably one of the biggest red flags for me is somebody whose tenure at past employment opportunities has uh-huh. been relatively short. And when questioned about that, normally they will attribute problems at that employer that were outside of their control. And
okay.
they were shorted by management at the last company. The job was misrepresented to them. They were dealt with unfairly. And those things can certainly happen. But when you see a pattern of that happening time after time after time, you know, you quickly decide that the common denominator for all these problems was the man or the woman that's sitting across the desk from you.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a strong likelihood that the negative experiences that they've had with their last four employers might be repeated with you.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's that and just, you know, a sense of entitlement that you kind of get by reading between the lines,
uh-huh.
as if people are owed something, you know, that's a turn off, a failure to take personal responsibility
yeah.
for their successes or their failures in past employment opportunities.
Interesting. Even for their successes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if someone is always saying, oh, well, it's because of all of these other people or it's because of my employment situation that I failed, that's a turnoff. But even if they say it's because of my employment situation or all these other people that I was successful, that's also a turnoff to you.
Well, a little bit in that I want somebody that, I mean, being a team player,
yeah.
you know, is important and that's big. And it's certainly an attribute that you look for in people, that they be able to work well within a group. But I'm also looking for self-starters and self-motivators
mm-hmm.
and people that are driven on their own to be successful, you know. And so, sometimes the humility of group speak, is just a cover for what I call a weak sister, because they're not effective on their own. So I want to hear somebody that says, "I did this, I drove this, I thought of this."
Okay, so the term weak sister, that's actually new to me. Can you, what does that mean? Where does that come from?
It's an old saying. A weak sister would be just the weakest link in the chain, the less effective partner, the lesser of two.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, that's a lot of good information about kind of hiring principles and American work ethic. A lot of very interesting
Special
information.
thanks
Thank
to
you
my
very
dad,
much.
Jeff, for
My
spending
pleasure.
time
I
with us
enjoyed
on the
it.
podcast today. Please remember that we will have our next episode of the podcast, a linguistic focus episode, coming out next week. And then the second half of this interview will be published the following week for episode 6. As always, thanks for listening.